Okay, so with that, our next speaker goes towards the atmospheric direction, the air topic. We have David Parrish, Senior Research Scientist with the Cooperative Institute for Research in Environmental Sciences, which most of us think of as CERES.
CERES, yes.
University of Colorado. And David, I'll let you take over now.
Great. A little more introduction. I've worked with NOAA for a long time and retired at NOAA, but then came back half-time with the University of Colorado. I still have the same office, still do the same science. I got rid of all the administrative work and just do science now. And so that's half-time. And then I also work as a independent consultant half-time. And I'll show you some of the work that's from the consulting part. And so today, what I'll try and do is briefly review the science of air quality impacts, summarize a TCEQ-sponsored project that is kind of parallel to the synthesis project that you're all doing, except we're concentrating just on the air quality impacts. And so I'll talk a little bit about that project because it may be, hopefully, will be useful to the air impacts in this synthesis. We'll review some of the field studies that we're investigating for this synthesis. And then, as time allows, if the five-minute sign hasn't come up, I'll discuss some of the interesting results that we'll include in that synthesis. So the science of air quality impacts. So humans, all activities that we carry out, and nature injects a wide variety of species into the atmosphere. And this is just a little schematic of those, some of the species that go into the atmosphere. And we talk about VOCs, volatile organic compounds, and we talk about NOx, oxides of nitrogen. And plus, there's lots of other species, and these go into the atmosphere, and then there's chemistry that takes place in the atmosphere. So when you hear about ozone pollution, that's not emitted from any process. Ozone is formed in the atmosphere from chemistry that goes on from involving these particularly VOCs and NOx. Ozone has health impacts. But probably the major health impact is particulate matter. So that's PM here. And that's emitted directly from various processes, and it's also formed in the atmosphere. And there's debate about which is more important, the direct emissions or the secondary emissions. So it's complex chemistry going on in the atmosphere, but the result is that it produces ozone, produces PM, and that's what leads to the health impacts that we worry about from air quality. Shale oil and gas production, that is another process that emits these species to the atmosphere. So this is an additional, relatively new source of emissions to the atmosphere, and it's in locations different than the kind of urban centers where most of these other emissions have taken place. So that's what's new about the air impacts from oil and gas development. So that's the quick introduction to the chemistry. The TCEQ-sponsored science synthesis report that we're working on, the purpose of that is to provide a scientific synthesis of recent research in air quality impacts from oil and gas development in Texas. And so it's going to be policy relevant. That means we've talked with the policymakers to determine what they are, the science they need to make the policy. But we are not going to be involved in trying to set those policies. The policymakers need to do that. The lead of this is Rambal Environ, is an environmental consulting firm, is contracted by TCEQ to lead this synthesis, and I've joined them as a subcontractor. The technical approach that we're taking is we've set up a, first we came up with science questions in cooperation with TCEQ, and we've set up working groups of scientists to address each of these science questions. The timeline, something similar to what you're on, by March 31st, we need to have all the work done. And so we'll come down to, I'll make another trip down to Austin to brief the TCEQ staff of what's going into these this synthesis report. And then by June, we need to have the first draft of the report due, and by June 30th, we'll have the final report done. So that's why I'm very grateful to come down to this meeting, is to be able to interact with the AIR people here, and we'll hopefully stay in contact with each other as these two efforts go on, and make sure we are coming out with consistent findings from these two efforts. So the science questions, they were organized to address the issues of most importance to the policymakers. They're specific enough to provide a focus for the synthesis, but they're general enough that we can meld them a little bit to make sure we cover all of the important emerging scientific issues. Now, we will address synthesized published results, but we'll also involve scientists from field studies and include ongoing analyses, at least that are mature enough that we're confident of including them in this synthesis here. So these science questions, I'll show you what the science questions are here in a second. Each question will address each question, but we're not expected to give comprehensive answers to each of these questions. They're very broad questions, and we can talk about the state of the science in answering these questions. So what are the science questions? Well, there's 11 of them. We can divide them into three broad categories. The first is emissions. What are the emissions from the oil and gas development that are entering the atmosphere? And I won't read through the questions, but there's five questions that address these emissions in detail. So we have a working group that's addressing each of these five questions. The second is chemical transformation. Boy, there's a lot of questions. All these little arrows here is very complex sort of chemistry that goes on. A lot of it is understood, a lot is not understood, and we really need to summarize the state of the science that addresses the important chemistry that produces ozone and produces particulate matter in the atmosphere. And so these are the science questions that deal with the chemical transformations. And then, of course, air emissions don't stay in one place. They're transported. We need to look at the transport and meteorology effects of these air quality impacts. So one issue is, do emissions from oil and gas development impact nearby urban areas? So the Barnett Shale with Fort Worth and Dallas nearby, Eagle Ford with Laredo is a city in the Eagle Ford area. So there's impacts between the oil and gas emissions and the more traditional urban emissions that we've been dealing with in the atmospheric chemistry realm. And so the question is, two questions on the transport. Here's a picture. This isn't Texas, perhaps you'll notice. This is China. Beijing is up in this area. And this really isn't air pollution coming out. This is more dust coming out, but the it's an interesting picture anyway. So that's a quick summary of what we're doing in this synthesis. Maybe I should stop at this point and ask if there's any questions in particular about the synthesis.
I have a quick question relative to your emissions. There's been some concern expressed about chemistry in the subsurface that leads to emission of some things that may not be tracked normally. Is that one of the issues on this list of questions?
We won't be doing anything with what's going on subsurface. We will be trying to characterize the emissions that that come out.
But the emissions are only, I guess the question is how wide a net is that emissions? The normal things that we look at, which might be hydrocarbons, methane, just any thought relative to potential, let's say, unusual compounds that might be emitted.
We'll look at that. I can mention two examples, perhaps. One example is hydrogen sulfide is emitted at least in some oil and gas fields, and that's not a typical species that we have dealt with in urban pollution. And there's also one interesting paper that I learned about from David Allen, that's head of the air group here, that they were measuring chloride, active chlorine species, and it's not clear where they're coming from. And so we'll definitely point out that as an issue, and we probably will not be able to answer where it's coming from, but we'll at least synthesize the state of the science in that regard.
I'm a little curious how you're going to separate emissions a little bit, because when I read reports, I see there's a mixture of what's called fugitive emissions, flaring of gas on purpose, and also the venting that we do of emissions on purpose that's not fugitive at all. That seems to get mixed up in this when people start talking about emissions. For example, for 50 years now, we have been venting off of stock tanks in oil fields. That's a permanent emission. That has nothing to do with fracking. It has nothing to do with the controversy that's arisen over methane from fracking. Okay, flaring is on purpose until you have a gas collection system, and then there's fugitive emissions which come from instruments and from leaking flanges and things like that. So how are you separating that?
We won't be doing any particular new science in trying to make new measurements. We'll try and synthesize the measurements that have been made both at the well pad level and particular facility level emissions that try and characterize exactly what these are. That's a very difficult process because each of these facilities is different, has its own particular emissions. And we'll try and synthesize what's known about this and dividing these emissions up according to these categories that you just mentioned. And then we'll also have, and that gives a good segue into the next talk, next subject here. Whoops, let's see. The working groups I'll just mention are some from the environmental contractor. We've got federal agency people. We've got university people. One person from an energy company is involved. And finally, the one person from the Environmental Defense Fund is involved. Some of the field studies, three field studies I'll mention that we'll rely on, and this is more focused on the atmospheric chemistry part. One was the Dallas-Fort Worth Barnett Shale Field Campaign that was initiated in 2010. I think the main measurements were in 2011. A strength of this field study is that you have comprehensive chemical measurements, so all these trailers were filled with instruments that help sort out the atmospheric chemistry going on. It can operate for weeks, and encounter a variety of meteorological conditions, but it's limited to this single location. But there's been a lot of work done here. The analysis is still in progress, and we'll try and synthesize the results of this study. And then, more close to my home, is NOAA field studies. So we've instrumented the NOAA P3 aircraft, which is more familiar perhaps from hurricane research. So outside of the hurricane season, we can instrument this aircraft and measure all of the important players, nearly all, in the atmosphere that produces the ozone and the particulate matter. And this is just a layout of all the instruments that are in the plane. What's important is this was a 2013 study, and it was based out of the Nashville area, and we could fly through various parts of the country. Mostly this was focused on urban and power plant studies, but also did some flights over the Haynesville, the Marcellus Shale, the Fayetteville Shale. And so that was a study that we completed. The analysis, particularly with respect to the oil and gas impacts, have not been completed. There we go. A more recent study in March and April of 2015 was the same aircraft, pretty much the same instrument package, but this was focused on oil and gas basins throughout the central part of the country here. And so we were stationed in the Denver area, and we could then cover all of the oil and gas basins in the central part of the country. And so we you can recognize all the different basins here. The strengths of this study is that we have comprehensive chemistry measurements that we can have on the aircraft. It's a mobile platform, so we can sample throughout the country. We can follow plumes downwind from important sources. And we can compare and contrast oil and gas basins throughout the country, including in Texas here. Weaknesses of the study: it's expensive, so we can only carry this out for a limited time. It's something like a six-week period, typically, that we have the aircraft, so we have to do all of these flights in that period. And that means that we have very poor statistics. All we get is a snapshot, or maybe two or three snapshots of a given oil and natural gas basin. But this gives us a great deal of information of the atmospheric chemistry, the transformation, and the transport that's going on. I'll show you some interesting results. 1 minute? Oh, goodness. I won't show too much then.
Yeah, it's okay because we'll just take a little less of the final questioning time.
Okay.
Yeah.
An interesting paper that was published in 2016 was based on satellite data measuring one of those oxides of nitrogen, NO2. And this study looked at what happened, how much the NO2 column changed between 2005 and 2014. And what you see, the most striking thing that you see, is large decreases of NO2 over all of the urban areas in the country. So this is a success of controlling emissions from vehicles, and it's a success of controlling emissions from power plants, and for example in the Ohio Valley here. So this is a great success story of the air pollution control efforts in the country, but there are some increases. Oranges that you don't see very well indicate that NO2 was increasing over at least three gas basins, the Permian, the Eagle Ford, and then the Bakken in North Dakota. This paper tried to relate those increases. And what they found, what they noticed, is that it was areas with particularly large amounts of flaring that showed these increases. And the implication, whether they really concluded that or not, was that it's this flaring is the dominant source of NOx emissions. So this comes back sort of to your question, is this really correct? And I would argue that we've got some work to do. This is part of the synthesis we'll try and do. Is this really a causal correlation, or is this reflecting something else? And I think it may well be reflecting something else, because if you look at the production of oil or natural gas, or if you look at the number of drill rigs operating in each basin, in the Permian, over this period that the satellite was looking, drilling was increasing. And so the drilling process, the well completion process, emits lots of oxides of nitrogen. So that may be why you see an increase over the Permian, but you don't see an increase over the Haynesville. In fact, if you look closely at that map, there's some indication of a decrease in NOx emissions over the Haynesville, and drilling has been going down. And if we look at the other two basins, the drilling was increasing over those periods. So that's what we have to sort out, is what we can say about the emissions and what the timeline is of the emissions and where they came from. And then one very more quick thing is we get a lot of information about the hydrocarbons, the VOCs that come out of these basins. So here's the VOC, ethane is the lightest non-methane hydrocarbon. And there's a lot of differences in the ratio of ethane to methane coming out of these different basins. And that's from the driest gas to the wettest gas. And we can do the same thing with other alkanes that come out of these basins. So we get a good fingerprint for what's coming out of each of these basins. And so these are all kind of correlated with the ethane. But if you look at some of the other VOCs that are measured, the fingerprints are somewhat different. And we can take these fingerprints, and we can at least use these fingerprints to get an estimate of the fluxes of these VOCs. There's been a lot of work to get the fluxes of methane, and this is the Bakken. I don't have the example for a Texas oil field at present. But we can get the ratio of the VOCs to methane, multiply times the flux of methane, and get an estimate for the flux of the hydrocarbon. Okay, so this is for the Bakken. This is for two different days. The results are somewhat different. This is a problem we've got with statistics, is each day things are a little bit different when we fly over. But what we can say is that if you compare this to estimates of the global emission, the Bakken field is accounting for something like 1.5 to 3% of the global emissions of, in this case, it's ethane, but we can do the same calculation for all of those VOCs. So similar analysis we can perform for all the oil and natural gas basins that were sampled and for all of the measured VOC species. So thanks very much.
So, David, we kind of are at the end, but you gave us an earlier time for Q&A, so if people have more questions, please approach David over lunch and breaks, and we'll go ahead to our next speaker. Thanks very much.